Welcome to Influential She, the podcast about accelerating the influence of women in the world.
You will find us to be a fresh voice in an old conversation.
And here we are, your amazing co-hosts, Deb Soholt
and Mel Schopp.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Influential She, our conversation about accelerating the influence of women in the world. I'm your co-host, Deb Soholt.
And I'm Mel Schopp, and we are here today with an amazing guest. We're going to tell you a little bit more in a bit, but we're talking about the high leverage practice of voice. And this is something that Deb, you and I have talked a lot about, in that sometimes women do the wrong thing when we think about using voice. It's tempting to raise our voice or to become outrageous rather than thinking about how voice can be a really powerful tool in trying to get our message across. And so I think that when we really learn to not just deep listen, but also to use our voice to elicit thinking in others, is when we really find our influence.
Yeah, because it's not just really about what we're our next soundbite or what we're trying to say, but it's using our voice to go into a stronger relationship with people.
Definitely.
That's really based on respect. And our guest today is amazing at this high leverage practice of voice. And I'm so happy that we're here. I wish our guests could see where we are. We're on the bluff overlooking the Missouri River in South Dakota, and we're in this fantastic space surrounded by windows. We're going to actually post a picture of, you know, what it looks like out of the windows. And it's just a gorgeous day. And we're with Christine Hamilton, who I've known for a long time, not extremely well, but we have a lot of mutual connections of people that we deeply care about. And so we've always talked about spending more time together, and we've been able to do that. And when we were thinking about our high leverage practice of voice, she immediately came to mind that, oh my goodness, this is a person that I've watched in community boards. She's an entrepreneur. She's a cattlewoman. She's working in some really interesting bioengineering, which we're going to talk about just a little bit. Really a consummate entrepreneur. But it's all wrapped up in this ability to use her voice to go into deep, deep conversation with people. And I've seen her in her board work and in just conversation that one-on-one that I've had with her, that she has extraordinary maturity in using this high leverage practice of voice. And we are just so delighted that you decided to come on our podcast, Christine. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
And thank you so much for hosting us in your beautiful home and just being so gracious to invite us in. It's just been really a lot of fun to be here. So, Christine, I think to really talk about where you are and how you use this practice of voice in such an effective way, we need to know a little bit of your backstory, because people go, what? She's a cattlewoman? You know, she's working in biotechnology and some really... Tell us a little bit about where you began and just some of the steps along the way that brought you to where you are now.
Well, thank you for giving me this opportunity to share. I appreciate it. I grew up in Kimball, South Dakota, lived in a two-story, four-square house on Main Street in Kimball. It's the house that... On my mother's side, it was their family home. It was built in about 1920. And, I just remember it was fun to be doing dishes at the kitchen window and look out and see the cars driving up and down Main Street, because, of course, that is a major entertainment, especially on Saturday nights. But it was a good place to grow up, you know, small town, school system, same class, 30 people, 30-ish throughout grade school and into middle school. And then my parents felt like I should be going to school on the East Coast. And in order to prepare myself for that, they wanted to send me to a prep school, a boarding school. So my sophomore year in high school, I attended a boarding school, a co-ed boarding school in Tucson, Arizona, where we also had a house for the winters, which my parents had, but actually didn't use all that much. And then my last 2 years in high school, I was in Connecticut at Miss Porter School, which is now called Porter's, and then went on to college in Massachusetts at Smith, and majored in philosophy because I could get away with that. My mother was one of the first women attorneys in South Dakota and wanted me to become a lawyer, and I didn't know if I wanted to become a lawyer, but I did try it, And so I'm a law school dropout, you know, just frankly speaking. It wasn't a good fit for me. I have a lot of respect and enjoy legal arguments and listening to them and enjoy my friendships with lawyers. Business was more what I was interested in and entrepreneurship. So I was able to convince my parents that going to Tucson, to the University of Arizona, and getting an MBA would be a better fit for me. And when I got there, they had just started this program that was initiated by a donation from Carl Eller with Circle K Stores, and others know him as a football player, to promote entrepreneurship. It was in the early 80s, and it was just when entrepreneurship was becoming a buzz concept, and everyone wanted to kind of be their own boss and, you know, promote their ideas. And so I was able to get an MBA, an executive MBA in entrepreneurship. And it involved creating a business plan for the whole year. There were about five classes in various aspects of what would go into a business plan. And before I had gone back to the University of Arizona, I had been involved in a venture based in Indiana. And it, it didn't work. And I thought, wow, here I am with a liberal arts degree, undergrad. And even though I grew up listening to my parents talk about business issues with the farming and ranching activities, I needed to get some hardcore knowledge. And so that was the impetus for going back. So a partner and I did a business plan based on the failed business and really learned a lot about how to structure a startup and how to nurture it and develop it. You know, it's really like raising a child mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. So that was a really good experience.
So I'm curious, though, did you have a plan what you were going to do with that after you were done? Because obviously it's worked really, really well. So was there a direct line or how did this all come together with the many things that you are now so successful at?
Well, thank you for that. But I think that that experience in writing a business plan and thinking about business issues, you know, just really supported my interest in that rush we get from having a great idea, at least we think it's great,
sure.
and moving it forward. I mean, it's the most fun thing ever, you know, and when it's successful and the whole idea that it's going to be successful, because why wouldn't it be? Mm-hmm. It's the best.
So in all of this, you've had to really cultivate how you use your voice because you're trying to promote ideas and bring people in. And where did you start? Because I see you on this high leverage practice of this very deep listening. In being with you, before you ever really offer and contribute, you listen to people very carefully and you can feel it. As a person that you quickly engage with you in authentic connection. How did that happen? Did that something that you just innately had in you? Is it something you thought about?
You know, I think it began, early on. My father used to say I could ride in the car for 100 miles and not say a word. So I have kind of a quiet disposition to begin with. I was an only child with older parents, so lots of opportunities to be seen and not heard. And I also was interested in how to develop relationships and how to be a friend, right? And so when I was in, early high school, sophomore year maybe, Barbara Walters came out with a book called How to Talk to Practically Anybody About Practically Anything. I still have that book. It's a yellowed paperback book. Mm-hmm. But she talked about listening and asking a question and really listening to the answer instead of thinking, well, what am I going to say next to prove my point? It's more about what can I hear that will prompt something organically, if you will, to come up to continue the interchange and the conversation. Plus, I was a talk show junkie. I love to listen to Tom Snyder. You know, I still call people my new best friend, you know, and Dick Cavett and Phil Donahue and Sally Jesse Raphael and, you know, mm-hmm. on through the years. I mean, just really great role models for how to have interesting conversations, which is really about having interesting experiences and therefore an interesting life.
You know, we're just inundated with so much information today that's out there. And so everybody's trying to get their voice, their point heard above all the rest. So I think what you've exemplified is that when you listen, I mean, there's this natural attraction. I had not spent any time with you until the last few days, but you feel this deep sort of connection that, wow, she's really interested in what I'm saying. That's an unusual and really a gift that you can give to other people. And so it's fascinating to see how you do that, which obviously has then contributed to the other work you've done. So I'm just fascinated with, can you tell us more about the businesses that you're involved in? So I know we alluded to the fact that you have a cattle business, you're a cattle woman, but I know that you also spend a lot of time in Las Vegas. I know that you have other interests. And so can you explain how that's all come together?
You know, I've been really fortunate growing up as a fourth generation agriculture in South Dakota, farming and ranching. So we straddle the Missouri River, farmland on the east side, some on the west side, but more ranchland and rangeland on the west side. Grew up with these Missouri River bluffs that really developed in me, I don't know which came first, a love of the land.
Right.
I mean, just a real love for the look of the land, different times of day, different seasons, the light.
It's amazing, by the way.
It is amazing. And everybody's going to wish they were seated here with us.
Well, and also a deep respect and a desire to be a good steward of the land. Mm-hmm. You know, in our farming practices, we have a sustainability practice that we bring in people who do this, agronomists and, mm-hmm. and people from out of state to work with us in developing a sustainability plan for the farming and ranching operation. So we're interested in innovating, learning new things, soil health, all of the, you know, integrating the cattle with the farming and just benefiting the whole ecosystem, if you will, including the people who work here and our communities.
Mm. And then you ended up with a meat packing business in Las Vegas, right?
Yes, through trying to do value-added agricultural projects, became acquainted with this opportunity in Las Vegas. And so we've been there with a company called Dakota Packing since 2006. And I'm there once a month for 4 days ever since. Lots of trips. If I'd been smart, I would have maybe, you know, purchased some real estate in 2008 or 9, but
invested in something, a little spot to,
yeah. Right.
But I think what's so interesting now is, and so for our listeners, you know, talk about the scope of your ranching operation and the cattle that you are responsible for, the numbers and...
Sure. So we run about 1,300 cows, and we take the calves through the backgrounding phase, and we also farm 12,000 acres-ish with corn and soybeans, winter wheat, alfalfa, peas, whatever we can hope will give us a margin these days. And we're very big advocates of knowing our costs. Both my husband and I were on the Farm Financial Standards Council, standardizing the way we look at cost behavior in our businesses. And in production ag, it's not widely adopted, but it's a very interesting activity to be involved in.
And what I loved is in meeting her husband, Eddie, he's a veterinarian. And so we were talking just about the ranch and, you know, and so I said something about, you know, working the ranch. He goes, oh, no. Christine is the operator of this ranch. She's the cattle woman. So I just thought that was so great. Because, you know, I think that's an atypical thing where it would be the woman's running the ranch. And I think there's a lot of mental models about that. So even in that, you've broken so many barriers. I can imagine there was a lot of conversation amongst cattle owners where you're at the table being a player in your own right that might be more male-centric. Did you ever find, you know, giving your voice to those conversations was ever difficult or?
You know, my first value-added project was Farmers Federated Pork. I'll just call them out. And I'm still an investor. It's a co-op, and we have a sow unit north of Salem, and all men and me on the board. And I really believe that if we care about the same things, it doesn't matter if we're male or female or what race we are or anything. Mm-hmm. As long as what we're working on, we're taking it seriously and we're doing the best we can, it doesn't take very long to get past that, oh, you're a woman and you know, what are you doing here? Which I have not encountered, frankly. You know, yes, it's different. A male organization, male-run organization is maybe different than a woman-led organization. But I think the seriousness over just kind of is more important than any of that.
Oh, that is such good advice.
That's fascinating. So in the last 24 hours, I've been sitting here amongst all of these people who have this amazing entrepreneurish, but also concept that I think is something that many people don't know about, and particularly in South Dakota. So Debbie, even with your background in medicine, the conversation has been way above me and around me, but it's fascinating what you are doing in biotech and with your husband and his partner. So it was funny, we've been sitting around, it's Eddie and Eddie, so it's Eddie Squared and Christine. But can you just share this amazing work that you are doing that is just so cutting edge, that brings another level of what you've really added value add to South Dakota itself, but also really nationally, that is just it's really amazing, Christine.
Well, thank you, and we hold it very dear as far as wanting to make sure that it succeeds to the best of our ability. So we're involved in an effort that's now called SAB Biotherapeutics, and it's been in South Dakota since the early 2000s, and both Eddie Hamilton and I have been involved since then in one way or another. And it's just been so fulfilling to watch the development of this research and get it to the point where it can really have a major impact on the future of human health. We make human polyclonal antibodies in bovine blood, and it involves a lot of technology that's been in development for over 20 years. We have over 60 patents, well-published papers on this, and it's the potential for this to do some good and make a difference in helping people feel better, even ultimately maybe saving lives, is quite, I don't even know the word. The magnitude of it is quite remarkable.
So just for our listeners to, you know, kind of simplistically explain, talk about how you can take an infection or an issue that's happening with someone and then grow the antibody actually in an animal that then can be used back with the human. Just talk a little bit about how that works.
So when we started this iteration of the technology in June of 2014, shortly afterward, we became aware of a patient in Boston. Actually, he found us on our website and contacted us, had his doctor reach out to us. He was at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, and his doctor was a Harvard doc, and contacted us and said, "We see by your website that you can make human polyclonal antibodies, which is the way that we naturally fight disease ourselves. If we're exposed to a virus or a disease, we make polyclonal antibodies. But sometimes, obviously, we have sickness because we don't make enough or they're not potent enough. It just doesn't always work." And he said, "Do you think you can make antibodies against the mycoplasma that my patient has?" So it was an infection, very virulent infection like MRSA. They had tried everything with all different kinds of antibiotics.
And it was a hip or something,
wasn't it? He had gone in for a hip replacement, right,
yep. Hmm.
And acquired this infection. And they had had no luck. He had been without a hip joint in bed for several years. So they cultured his mycoplasma. We sent it to a lab, and they made an antigen based on his mycoplasma. And then we inoculated one of our cows with his antigen, and she produced human polyclonal antibodies against his mycoplasma. We harvested the antibodies through plasmapheresis, same process as one would use with a human, but change the software, so it's a larger volume, purified the plasma and the antibodies and sent that off to Boston. And they treated him with the antibodies, and within a few months, they could not find a trace of mycoplasma in his system.
He was healed.
The wound that had been a weeping wound for several years was closed.
That is just totally amazing.
I mean, just totally amazing. The potential, and that's what you talked about in the biotherapeutics, yes, of the ability to do good. So in all of that, you've had to probably push yourself a little bit in going to get investors, in bringing voice to this project. I mean, this is like a cutting edge entrepreneurial project. So talk a little bit about, I mean, is that always easy for you? Are there times where you're, you know, when did you feel, I mean, like, how do you use that effectively? And what would you tell people that want to grow their capacity for stronger voice, for influence?
I think that we cannot separate our voice from our presence and our interests. So whoever we are is what we communicate. And I guess my thought would be, just talk about your passion. You know, if you really believe in this, whatever this is at the time, and you want it to happen and it's a good thing, then that is what gives the authenticity. That's what gives the sincerity. And that ultimately, I believe, will lead to success.
You know, that's interesting you say that, because just in being with you over the last 24 hours and amongst you, your deep passion for this just is, it's so genuine that the authenticity of what you really care about making, it's for the greater good. It's not just that this is my business, it's for the greater good. And so I know that you had shared with us last night when you were talking about going, was it to Harvard? I think that you had to talk about this, where it wasn't necessarily your, probably what you would be comfortable doing, but you brought your authentic self there. And as a result, you were able to, you know, push your way through that. And I think that's what I have felt with you, being able to share this authentic passion for what you see potentially for the future.
Well, and when we're involved in something that's greater than ourselves, mm-hmm. there's always room for more, yeah. right? There's always room for more people to help and put our shoulders to the wheel and see what we can accomplish.
I think the other thing that's so interesting about being with you, Christine, is, you know, I met you years ago in working on something called The Art of Hosting Conversations That Matter, mm-hmm. and that there are certain techniques of bringing people in to bring their voices to the forefront, even if they aren't certain what passion they're wrapping themselves around yet, but a way to elicit this thinking from others through better conversational tools. So you've actually, you know, really become quite seasoned in this and facilitate deeper conversations amongst people. And that's been a passion of yours, of just creating better goodness in the world. Can you talk a little bit about maybe some of the things you've learned about bringing voice to passion and this integration of people through these art of hosting or dialogue or some of the work you've done? Tell our listeners about what you've been up to.
Well, probably in the late 90s it was, we have a friend who had been interested in systems thinking, and he had attended an MIT week-long seminar in systems thinking and the systems approach. And people who are engineers would be very familiar with this, that it's all a system, and if you influence one part of the system, something else is impacted mm-hmm. in the other side of the system. Maybe it's something you want, maybe it's an unintended consequence. So there were a group of consultants in Boston, in the Boston area, who were involved in working with companies, governments, communities, nonprofit organizations, any kind of endeavor where there are groups of people involved in helping create this understanding of how the system works in whatever particular example they were working with. And so I'll give you one good example. One of the conferences, they had annual conferences for about 25 years. And often those conferences would, if they weren't in Boston, would be somewhere where there were groups working on this approach. And there were, you know, folks involved in this approach who had been working with companies in that geographic area. So one of the conferences we attended was in San Diego. And it was using a practice called World Cafe, which I love, love, love.
I love World Cafe.
It is just amazing, you know, and it for imparting information and for getting people involved and energized around a topic. It's fabulous. So the theme was leadership, and they began with a theater in the round depiction of Shackleton's journey and kind of really deconstructing the decisions that were made on that journey. Mm-hmm. There was a book that was out at the time, too. And then there were over 700 people at small tables that had red and white checkered tablecloths and a candle and some paper with markers, colored markers to doodle, and tables of like four people. And there was a question, a facilitator at the end of this asked a question 15 minutes at the table talking about what everybody at that table thought about that question, then get up and move to a different table, do another round for 15 minutes. And you could maybe do 2, 3, 4 rounds, and then you've pretty well kind of got the topic illustrated. And then you kind of harvest that popcorn style, you know, the facilitator will just, and people, the buzz in the room, I've done this in
it's
other
unbelievable.
Meetings. It is so cool.
And nobody wants to leave.
that's really great.
That's what the great thing is about it.
And instead of, you know, sitting, you know, in rows and listening and then asking questions in a big group, this is something where everybody's involved. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets to say what they think.
Everybody can use their voice.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's up, you know, it's always the loudest that usually get heard. And this way everybody participates. But then how have you taken that further? So that was your first introduction, correct? Is that the same? I mean, you got involved in the work that you've done. So can you explain how you've taken that beyond that point?
Well, I've been involved in a couple of organizations that are concerned with trying to create vitality in rural areas in particular. Mm-hmm. So we have a family foundation, and we are working on that. Been involved with what's now Dakota Resources for 12 years. Other organizations that really are trying to elevate opportunities and vitality for the organization or for the community or whatever. I think it's a very effective way to create a strategic plan for a company or a community. And at least get people heard. And then, you know, when people feel like they're heard, then they become involved and they get interested. And then we can create some momentum. And who knows where it will lead. Mm-hmm. The sky's the limit.
And, you know, and I've used that technique quite a few times in different boards that I've been on, like you have. And what it started to help me really see in bringing other people's voice to the forefront is the power. And the reason it's called World Cafe is because think of all the things that happen around a cafe table. And so then in a smaller way, after I saw how people would just be more comfortable, you know, sort of like the community of having food or a cup of coffee, and you strip down all this preconceived where you're at. So since then, I have used this technique of saying, we got to move out of this. It was in a health system, and if you'd see where there's hierarchy issues happening, and you know, we really need to punch through to get to some level of agreement with physicians and nurses and whoever. We'd say, let's go out for a beer. Let's go have a cup of coffee. Let's go. And that is where the magic would happen, that we would be away from the construct of whatever this organization is that kind of gets in your way because there's a hierarchy there, and get down to just deep listening, asking questions about where people are at. And it astounded me. It shouldn't have. I mean, it's pretty self-evident because this is how we all started. It's, you know, around a breakfast table, around a cup of coffee, whatever. This is where voice starts to really become powerful. And I was amazed at what we could get done at just kind of a human level agreement and some trust and understanding and respect. The respect exponentially grow. Even though we might just still disagree on something, we sort of figured out where the other person was coming from. And we're able to problem solve together better. I think it's so these techniques, you know, particularly World Cafe, it starts with like a wicked question. And I've just seen barriers break way down in these rounds of people talking.
Christine, I know we need to wrap up soon, but I am curious because I think, you know, you are involved in so much. You have, you know, large business interests, but you continue to be engaged and involved at the grassroots level in South Dakota contributions, big and small. So what drives you to continue? I think you said last night you wouldn't have to do some of the things that you're doing. You continue to contribute. What drives you to make that happen? Because I find that really fascinating. It'd be easy to sit back and just say, you know what? I've done enough. But you continue. So can you just share with us what it is that keeps you so engaged and continuing to give back?
It's fun for me. That really is the bottom line. For whatever reason, it's fun, it's interesting, it's dynamic. You know, the idea of relaxing and doing nothing, it just sounds terrible
to me.
Yes.
That's why we started IG. We're like, you know, what are we going to do? Continue on. We're not just going to roll up the streets. We're not done yet. We just have to keep going.
Well, I do have to say, you know, we're just so thankful that you invited us into your home. Number one, you've been helping us to really clarify and articulate some things that we want to do moving forward. And I know, Deb, your long-term friendship, I'm so grateful that you've introduced us.
Well, and it's just, you know, I just can't emphasize enough to those that are interested in this podcast that this tool of deep listening, this developing a maturity of wholeheartedness and true interest in other people mm-hmm. is really what starts to bring about the most influential voice. We can do sound bites all day long and have our opinions, and Christine's style is one of just unbelievable graciousness. And it comes through her authentic personality of not being a huge extrovert in a large crowd of people, probably more of an observer and a listener to begin with. Others, like me, I'm probably more of an extrovert and kind of moving around the room, but also to cultivate, instead of coming in with an agenda that I'm trying to push to people, I'm taking my passion, as you talked about, and trying to be in conversation that then you have the ability to bring voice to the things that you deeply care about. And Christine, you just exemplify that. It's just been really so cool to watch your effectiveness on all these different boards, where you've taken your business passions as well as your civic passions, your land passions, your, you know, wanting the community and the world to be a better place, and then embracing your talents, which are extraordinary as well, but cultivating that together to bring voice in such a powerful way. When Christine speaks, people really want to listen. And it's been just such an honor to spend time with you. So thank you again for having us to your home.
You know, when I think that truly, I know that we have talked within our high level practice of voice, is that when another voice perceives that somebody is listening, they feel respected. And I think that that's what you've done. And you've done that so well in the work that you've done, but also I know with the two of us today. So we want to thank you. So, you know, we want to thank everybody for tuning in to another episode of Influential She. And we really hope that you'll do it again. But we do want to leave you with one big question. So this can be your wicked question for the day. Is, have you really thought about how you want to use your voice and how you're going to do that to be effective? So thanks again, Christine. And tune in again.
Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed our podcast, we'd be so jazzed if you rate us on whatever app you use to find us. And hey, be sure to tell all your friends about Influential She.
And please visit us at InfluentialShe.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. And you know what? If you come up with a new one, please let us know. In the meantime, remember, stay influential.